Hi folks, welcome to episode 9 of the Safety Podcast. As ever, I really appreciate you taking the time to listen in. Today we have Tom Oxley on the show from Bamboo Mental Health. Tom is going to share his very personal story of what brought him to specialise in this area. Tom opens up and tells us how his company approaches this notoriously tough topic with businesses in a meaningful and impactful way. He also shares with us some of the common pitfalls when implementing a mental health strategy and goes on to give us some recommendations on where he thinks you should focus your time, effort and resources. Let's do it.
Welcome to the Safety Podcast with your host, all the way from a small green island in the wild Atlantic Ocean, Richard Collins.
We're not going to waste any time before we get into this today, as it runs a full 30 minutes. I hope you get lots of value from this conversation. I know I definitely did. Okay then, let's go talk to Tom. Tom Oxley from Bamboo Mental Health, welcome to the Safety Podcast. It's great to have you on the show today. How are you keeping?
I'm very well, actually. Thank you very much. Thanks for asking. How are you?
Great. Yeah, really, really good. All the better for having you on the show now. We have attempted this on more than one occasion, so it's good to finally get you on. We've had, just so the audience know, we've had a couple of audio attempts that have scuppered us, and of course we've been busy doing various things, so we're persistent as usual, and we've got here. Hopefully everything will go according to plan today, so I'm looking forward to chatting to you about what you're doing. Yeah, so could you, even to just kick off then, do you want to tell the audience a little bit about yourself and obviously what's brought you to opening up a company and doing what you're doing with the mental health scene?
Of course. So I do mental health in the workplace, and that's two things really. First of all, I review employers and I collaborate with them, and I help them support people with stress, anxiety, depression, normal stuff. And I try and see it from the employer's point of view and the employee's point of view. And the other thing that I do is I train managers and I train people in how to have these sort of conversations around mental health, spot the signs, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this conversation and how you actually can find the balance between looking at it from the employer's perspective and the employee's perspective. And of course, then, you know, the HSE professional's perspective as well, who again, you know, is sitting maybe in a slightly different position from both of those other parties, being a kind of an intermediary. And hopefully you can help us sort of, you know, look at the business case for approaching this. And as we know, there's been lots and lots of coverage in the media. It's on the public agenda massively. And just before we get into the details of what you're doing, could you tell us a little bit more about your background and how you actually got involved in it in the first place?
I've had a few careers, really. My first one was in public relations and very successful working for an agency in Norfolk, having a wonderful time, burning the candle at both ends. And you can guess the next part of the story. I found myself signed off with stress, anxiety and depression for what was initially 2 weeks and then became 3 months. And I really muddled through. At work were supportive, and particularly a couple of people there who I will be forever thankful for, who noticed that I wasn't myself. But there wasn't really a... there wasn't really a policy. There wasn't really a process. There wasn't really the language around mental health. And so we all really muddled through. And that planted a seed. It wasn't until I left a couple of jobs later, I went on to be a corporate responsibility manager, which is a bit of a mouthful. And that means like ethical stuff for a big firm. And it's when I left there where I thought, there's something in this mental health thing. And I started to work with Time to Change, who are a fantastic national mental health charity, and they had a project to do with workplaces, and I helped them. I helped them review employers. I went in and I started asking questions, and I rummaged around HR policies and procedures, and I interviewed lots of people, and I wrote them a report with some survey material, and really started feeding back to them what it was like to work unwell while working for them. So that was a charity project, and at the time I was freelancing doing that sort of thing. And I thought to myself, there is a business here. There is a big need for this. I can't be alone in feeling the things that I was feeling at work a decade ago. And here we are. And I think the media is starting to pick up on it. People like Stephen Fry were talking about this stuff. There wasn't at the time the great sort of melee of royal families and marathon running and that sort of thing that there is now. But certainly you could feel the conversation bubbling up. So there was my experience and my work with Time to Change, and those things just kind of came together at the same time as all this media attention a couple of years later. And so I find myself running Bamboo Mental Health, and it's a real sort of crest of a wave. And there's quite a lot of people doing it at the moment, but I like to think I do it well. And there's a methodology based on some good practices and also my personal feelings about this. There is a beating heart behind this business.
It's pretty cool to hear that you've actually went from quite a negative personal experience to then helping with what was probably very leading edge charitable work, and came right through full circle to finding a business opportunity where you're delivering something quite unique and impactful for both people and businesses to help us deal better with these issues. Can you tell us a little bit more with that in mind about your methodology and how you've used your own experiences to mold your approach?
Yes. So it's really important that I don't rock up on the doorstep of a business and start telling them what to do when it comes to mental health. It's really important that the approach is strategic and relevant and meaningful. And so what I really bring to the party is a methodology that gives them some evidence to work with. So I look at their HR policies and procedures. I go through them with a fine tooth comb. I sit down and I look face to face with 10 or 20 people who've been unwell whilst working for them. And I ask them about the stuff they went through. I ask them how their manager was. I ask them what they think of the leadership. I ask them where the policies are on the intranet. I go to places where other people find it tricky. And I also do a staff survey, and that survey is a wonderful cocktail based on the health and safety executive stress management standards and the CIPD, that's the Institute of Personnel Development, some questions from them. And I really try and figure out what the picture is at that particular organization. And so when we get down to making recommendations, which is a couple of months down the line, probably, we know we're doing it with real people, real stories and real situations in mind. So I am very conscious that I'm not just somebody who's had a bit of stress, anxiety and depression. And I've gone to Pronto Print and I've got myself some business cards saying well-being advisor on. What I bring is an approach where I play back to the organization what it is really like, and we work from there. So it stays collaborative all the way through. They give me access to their people and their stuff, and I go through their underwear drawers on this subject, and they in turn trust me not to be sort of just shouting at them and barking orders, rather trying to figure out what is right, meaningful, relevant to them.
That's fascinating that you go into that detail, and I can really resonate with how that would be valuable for an organization, you know, from my own experience.
Yeah, it's valuable, you know, and if I weren't to do that, so say I was to rock up on a construction site and say, okay, everybody, put your tools down now. We're going to do some meditation. That reaction is going to be, we're going to lose this one before we've even started. And so it is important that I get to know the organization, and that in getting to know an organization, I get to know the employer and the employee experience. That's how I try and balance those two things.
Yeah. I guess, you know, the organizations are living and breathing animals, and you need to understand how they operate, and each one can be very different to the other, even within, you know, similar sectors, and, you know, whether you're working in construction. Yeah, that's really interesting.
That's true. Some are absolutely the beginning of their journey, and others are much more advanced and they want to measure whether or not things are working for them. So it really depends on where an employer is on the journey and where they want to be.
What do you think is the main issue that we're trying to actually tackle here? And is this issue something that is workplace born, or is it a side effect of modern life and modern living mixed with the expectations of workplaces? Can you give us any insight into what you're actually finding as the root cause of it? Or is that maybe too difficult of a question?
No, that's a very important question. Life plays a role in 90% of people's poor mental health. That's the non-work stuff. So work on its own is the cause. I mean, absolutely on its own is probably the cause of about sort of 7 to 20% of people's poor mental health. That's what they say. Mm-hmm. More likely, so 80 to 93% say that life or a non-work thing plays a major role or is the sole cause of their poor mental health. So it's very likely to be a mix. Let me give you this example. I think we all assume that work is stressful, and it certainly can be. But imagine this, right? Imagine you've got a rucksack on your back, and as you go through life, things happen. As things happen, somebody's putting a rock in your rucksack. So let's say I wake up in the morning, it's a glorious morning, I feel good, and then I start to encounter life. Okay, I've got my emails coming in. Maybe some family member is sick. Maybe that my bus is late or something like that, or I can't find the documents that I need. Blah, blah, blah. Or you know, we start to put things in our rucksack as we go along through the day, and as we arrive at work, and I have an argument with Marjorie, and I have a new project come in, and I have a difficult customer, and you know, and all those things. You see the rocks building up in my rucksack, and then a big thing happens, like my child fails an exam, or has a health scare with my wife, or something like that, and I've got to drop the rest of it, and it's another boulder in my rucksack, and you can see how these things can become overwhelming. It is not just one single event, though sometimes one single event can upset us, particularly things like a house move or grief or a separation or a job change or a new baby. Do you know positive things can actually be overwhelming for us as well, because all these rocks in our rucksack count. And we don't arrive at work as a fresh piece of paper. You know, we have been scribbled on by life before we've even left the door. And so when if we're thinking about us and our teams and even our boss as well, our manager, and we've all got these rocks in our rucksack all the time. Socioeconomics, upbringing, they all count. And so it's quite a sort of dynamic and complex picture, but they all count.
To break it down, I'm an HSC professional in an organization who hasn't confronted the mental health issue that exists in their workplace, and whether or not it's a direct impact of what's going on in the workplace or is more impacted by all those factors you've just mentioned that are external to the workplace. How can you help us as HSC professionals convince then the employer to actually take proactive action on making the situation better?
Well, there are three main reasons why a business ought to get this right, or an employer needs to get this right. One is they are legally required to do so, and there are certain things that the health and safety executive expect them to do from a stress management point of view. So here we're talking about workplace stress, and there are various things that they've got quite a comprehensive list of standards and how they might be applied in terms of a stress risk assessment. Control, demands of the job, the support you get, how the organization deals with change, relationships, that sort of thing. So that's pretty clearly laid out. So from an organization that is risk averse and looks from a sort of a value protection point of view, then that's pretty clear. There is a duty of care for the health and safety of your employees, and health includes mental health. And so that's important to recognize. But there are also moral reasons and business reasons for us to get this right. So you might have an organization that is actually just wants to do the right thing. And I get those coming through the door as well. I said, listen, we know that this is a big topic. Everybody is talking about it. I looked at my absence stats and now I see that mental health is one of my chief causes of absence because people feel that they can talk about it more. What do I do? What do I do next? We want to get this right for our people. And primarily because good work is good for us. And when we treat our people right and we enable the sort of – we create a culture where good work can be done by good people and they can stay, then that is good for performance. And so in summary, it doesn't really matter sometimes if you are looking at this from a legal point of view or a performance point of view or a moral point of view. All paths lead down the same road. Good work is good for us. And so when you enable that in your workplace, you will get people lasting longer, being happier, and less likely to take time off or sue you if things go wrong.
So digging a little bit deeper, Tom, is there anything you can share with us to give us some idea of what parts of an organization that you would generally leverage to make sure you get maximum impact with your programs or make sure you achieve the right result?
Yes, of course. There are roles for throughout the organization. So when I run the reviews, they typically tell me that there are jobs for everybody. So leaders in particular need to take the lead from an ambassadorial and policy point of view. They need to cascade the principles that people will be supported and it's okay to say that you're unwell when it comes to mental health. Managers need to be trained. So when the leaders have initiated the conversation in the organization, the managers need to be trained and capable to have those conversations. If somebody goes up to you and says, okay, Richard, I am struggling today, the manager needs to be able to go, okay, let's have a cuppa, let's see what we can do. You don't want them floundering around. You need your HR team on point about this. You need your policies and procedures in place. So everything. So I'll give you a little example along the way. What happens if you're unwell? Well, most people, they ring in or now they send an email. And that floats around for a bit, goes to HR, gets sent to the manager. So I try and pin down that process to go, okay, so who is that email being sent to? What are they doing? Where is it going? What does the manager do when they find that somebody's off unwell? Is there an automated reply saying, here is our employee assistance program? I really try and get down into it. And so I try and look at that whole process. And I look at individual awareness as well and sometimes performance and resilience issues. So in doing that, from the leadership through managers, HR, and individuals, and then I also look at communications, I try and get a really rounded picture. Typically, organizations don't have the right conversations being said by their managers. So the leadership has said staff, they've got the policy in place, HR are ready, and there's loads of support and online training, but the managers are frightened of these conversations. So a common thing that I will do is to train managers in those conversations, how to spot the signs, step in, know when to shut up and know when to signpost on. So that's important. And in terms of how successful that is, these things take time. This is not about one single initiative. This is a cultural change and it occurs over some many months. But the idea is that we give the workers in that organization lots of different opportunities to be able to talk, to get support and help. And therefore, we look at things like absence, and we might see absence going up in the short term because people are taking the absence that is important for them. But long-term absence might be going down. So we might also – so we could look at these things in different ways. And another thing that I do is I train managers to have these conversations, as I've said. And I know that some people who've been on the courses that I run have identified people in their teams who've been acting out of character unusually. I've had a chat with them, and they've started talking about thoughts of suicide. So there are some pretty poignant stories of this stuff getting through. I wouldn't say it was all about me. It's really about the guts of an organization to be brave and change.
One of the things, sorry, I'm just thinking out loud here. One of the things actually I was thinking about asking you was in regard to the risk of absenteeism or absence getting worse actually as a result of this. And if, you know, is there fear from some organizations that might be the case?
Yeah, too. There's sometimes people always talk about a tsunami. Is this work going to create a tsunami of people being ill?
Yeah.
My response to that is that you don't make people more ill by talking about mental health. What you might do is create a pathway for people who are already ill or think they might be to get support. And that might mean that there is some short-term absence. What happens typically at the moment is that people will experience poor mental health. They can't talk about it to their manager because they're stigmatized from themselves or from the organization. Mm-hmm. And they think, oh, I can't go to work. I can't sit next to Richard and cry all day. So I'm going to sign myself off. I'm going to have a tummy bug or a migraine or a bad back. And I can get away with that for about 5 to 10 days before my HR department is going to start pinning me against the wall. And so we discover that there is absence that's either unrecorded or poorly recorded, which is an interesting aspect to delve into.
One of the things that I wanted to get your opinion on, Tom, on this as well, is with a lot of issues within, you know, our profession, there tends to be at times a sort of flavor of the month type of feeling to it.
Yes.
And at the moment, the mental health issue is certainly the flavor of the month. I've actually just read a very sort of preliminary HSE report, which you may have seen yourself, regarding it was trying to look at the effectiveness of mental health first aid training and so on. And there certainly seems to be gaps and no real clarity over, you know, the achievement of sustained improvement, which is obviously a risk that exists. What do you think about the general types of training that we're using here and that seem to be popular, like the first aid approach and that type of thing? Do you think we're ticking boxes here, or do you think there's benefit in doing those things? And how do you think we can actually get a sustained improvement for organizations as opposed to just a, you know, a one-off bit of action that looks like we're doing something?
Yeah, I think there is a danger of that. I see some organizations going, oh, you know, just train my people without having the strategic framework in place. So let's take a look at that from a safety point of view. If your leaders are saying, be watchful, be safe, and they are not being watchful and safe themselves, and yet they're expecting you to go on a training course, that is not going to be effective in your organization. Same with mental health. So I think that training does have its place, and mental health first aiders, but it needs to be connected to a whole picture, a whole holistic piece. So from an employee point of view, where it becomes effective is I join the organization and I see my CEO in an induction video talking about this stuff. And I have my one-to-one with my manager, and my manager talks about the my world outside of work, so he can get to understand me. And I go to the toilet and I see a poster for the employee assistance program, and I talk to HR and they're savvy about the conditions. And so you see that an organization can build up a whole picture. That any of those things just in isolation won't work. So if you've got a very well-meaning MD or chief executive who's talking about this stuff all the time, but there's no training and the managers aren't fulfilling that, then it's just going to fall flat. Equally, if you've got the best training in the world, but but it's tucked away somewhere on the internet, and an engineer in Acton, all they see is corporate messages about billion this investment, and it's just going to fall flat. This has got to be a cultural piece, and it's got to be a holistic approach to it. There are pitfalls with these individual things, and so, for example, if I were to walk in and start saying I'm going to do a load of breathing techniques with your manufacturing guys and girls, people are going to go, that's weird, that's odd, it doesn't compute, it's not in my language, not in my time. Do you know what I mean? We've got to get realistic about this stuff. I do think that managers should be told about their responsibilities and equipped to deal with them. And that was a finding from, I think, 46 out of 47 employer health checks that took place from 2013 to 2015, funded by Department of Health through Time to Change. So if you were to spend your money anywhere, then probably manager training. But if you want that to be effective, then you need to have a framework around it that links into the top to the bottom and the HR of the organization.
You really, I think, hit the nail on the head there. Certainly from my experience, I can, you know, say that the line manager is the first point of contact, being aware and being trained to deal with the issues appropriately in the first instance. But then that needs to be linked back to their managers and the departments and organizations around them that support them. And then, as you've said before, inherently built into their policies and procedures and so on, so that it's throughout the organization and not just a little bit of a flavor of something for an hour on a Friday afternoon.
That's it. It's got to work. If it doesn't work, it will quickly get round that it doesn't work. And when it doesn't work, it goes badly wrong. 300,000 people leave their jobs in the UK every year because of poor mental health. That's a lot of wasted talent. That's a lot of tribunals, a lot of grievances. It's a lot of, that from a pure economics point of view, that is a lot of waste. How are these people feeling? So I'll give you an example. So let's say a good worker, their mother or father dies, and they have their 2 or 3 days compassionate leave if they're lucky, and they return to work, and they try and negotiate some flexible working or some adjustments, some workplace adjustments, which apply to mental health as well, by the way. They're trying to arrange these adjustments with their manager. The manager turns around, tells them to sling their hook because I'm not going to give you flexible time, otherwise everyone's going to want that. And that person ends up, becoming unwell. Maybe the grief starts to turn into depression, goes to see the doctor, says to the doctor, listen, I don't know if I'm coming or going. I don't know if I'm safe. I've just had a row with my manager about it. The doctor's going to turn around this country and go, I think you need some time off. I think you need some pills. That's what the NHS is broadly equipped to do in this country. So you see that very quickly, somebody who's got a non-work problem can have a poor experience with work and it becomes medicalized, and then they're sat at home with a GP who's done, the well-meaning GP has had a conversation with them and signed them off because it's good for them to have a bit of a break. But they're now sat at home with daytime television. Family doesn't want them there. They don't know what they're doing. Work is now the problem, and they can quickly tumble down a very costly path. And those things can happen. So if you flip that story, and you have a workplace that, you come in and, maybe there's, you've got some grief or some parent has died, and your manager notices and says, I don't think you're right. And let's have a chat with HR. And HR goes, yeah, I think that this person might need some work from home or a phased return. And we'll just take our time on this because you're valued and you matter, and we want you back and we want you well. And after a bit of time and a bit of work from home, the person does return to work, and you get to keep that person, you get to keep their skills, and that person becomes an advocate of the organization. So from an individual perspective, it matters, and from an organizational perspective, it matters.
Two very different outcomes there, as you've just explained, Tom, and I think that's a great way to finish our chat today. I think there's going to be a lot of people that are interested to hear what you've just talked about, and it'll be really valuable for our audience, who are predominantly HSE professionals who have to try and figure this out with along with their HR departments and you know, leaders of their organizations and so on. And I'm sure there'll be other managers and people that are on the front line that'll be able to listen and begin to understand, you know, what might work for their organization, and of course what might not work as well, and the wrong way to go about doing this. So look, I'd really like to just say thank you so much for coming on. And I'm sure we'll be able to give some of the folks listening some links to where you're at with Bamboo Mental Health. And I'm sure we'll be able to provide them with some resources and reference bits and bobs that they can go away and look at and read. And I'm sure you'll be happy enough if anyone wants to contact your organisation to have a discussion. Would that be okay?
I'd be delighted. And if you know, if they want to do one thing today, go and start a conversation at your next SLT meeting or your management meeting about this. And it's important to know that you want to collaborate with other departments to get this right and really land it. But start that conversation. Be brave. And there's a lot of opportunities to help people and their families. So there's a very good thing behind all this.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on today, Tom. And all the best of what you're doing. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure.
I hope you'll agree that Tom gave us lots of takeaways from that call, and I'd love to know your thoughts. You can engage with us on LinkedIn or on the podcast page directly, or if you'd rather pop an email through, then you can do that if you leave one at info@safetypodcast.com. Many of you haven't tackled this issue, I'm sure, in your workplace yet, and hopefully this gives you some perspective as to what may or may not work effectively. You can find Tom at bamboomentalhealth.co.uk, and we'll also leave you some useful links for you in the resource section of the podcast page. Don't forget, if you haven't done so already, hit subscribe to the podcast to get automatic notification of new releases. And even better than that, you can join us in the safety community by subscribing on the podcast page and get involved in our future development. Thanks once again for tuning in. Hopefully we'll catch you in the next episode.
Thanks for listening to the Safety Podcast. We would love you to tell us which episode you would like to hear. Don't forget to give us a shout at safetypodcast.com.